Hey gang, are you in a band here in Austin? You're trying to make a leap from the band of schmoes to the band of pros? Well, you need to get out of the garage, you need to get out of your living room, and you need to get to Space Rehearsal and Recording. Space is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. I've got a room there and I love it. Call 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com. Stop being the band of schmoes, be the band of pros. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. Robert LaRoche is here. He just put out his new album, Patient Man. Yeah, that's right, man. Normally you would know him as the guitar player with Patricia Vaughn, or if you know him old school style, you might know him from the band The Size that was on Virgin back in the early 90s, but they were around in the 80s and the 90s in Massachusetts, kind of Northampton area. But for the last, like, over the last decade, you might know him as the guitar player with Patricia Vaughn. And they put out several records, but now Robert LaRoche has decided to put out his own album. And he hired my man, Darren Murphy, one of my best friends, the drummer from Skyrocket, music director from Skyrocket, to produce his record. They made a great record. Fantastic album, Patient Man. You can find it at robertlarochemusic.com. Go there. It's on the iTunes. It's at the CD Baby. You get the physical ones. You can get the downloads at the iTunes. Find it on Spotify. Do the whole thing. robertlarochemusic.com. Before we get to my fantastic conversation with my man Robert LaRoche, let me tell you what's going on with me. Things are going good. Played with the Lady Band Johnson at the Townsend. Great time. The Blue Bonnets played, even the Exiles, great band. Just a great time. Dominique's birthday. Happy birthday, Dominique. It's coming up on Thursday. Now, on Friday, Skyrocket will be at Sam's Burger Joint in San Antonio, Texas. Get ready to jam there. That's Friday, November 6th. We go on at about 9:30, I think, around there. Yeah, get out there to Sam's Burger Joint if you're in San Antonio. It's a great show. Then we're going to head out to on Saturday to some place called Sonora, Texas. I've never been to play some kind of show out there. Should be fun. Always a good time. You know what I mean? All right. So, of course, Darren Murphy is in the band, Skyrocket, and he produced this album, Patient Man, for Robert LaRoche. I want to thank Joe Ray DeMeno for setting this up. I've known Robert for a while, for I guess like around 10 years, a little over 10 years. We did a show together one time out in Alpine, Texas. And he was playing with Patricia Vaughn, and I got to open for them, and we ended up hanging out that night, late night, having a great time. And it was great to sit down and catch up with Robert, find out where he's been, talk about The Size, this band that he was in the from the early 80s to the late 90s. Amazing band. They were signed to Virgin in 92, power pop band. I loved them. So I didn't even know anything about that. Son of a Northampton, Massachusetts-based band. So let's sit down. Let's talk to Robert LaRoche about The Size, about touring with Patricia Vaughn, about being a patient man, and making this record Patient Man. All right? Let's get down.
In the evening, when you're glowing, hanging off some satellite, baby, please, without knowing, take my heart.
It's so DIY for everyone. I mean, even Radiohead doesn't have a label.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, there's a lot of people out there. And the diminishing... Are you putting your stuff like on Spotify and that kind of stuff?
CD Baby is doing the whole campaign on, digital and physical copies. So far.
Right.
So far.
So one of the things that I love about doing this show is that there's people that I've known for years, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it's my buddy. He plays guitar with Patricia Vaughn.
Yeah.
And that's who that guy is. Then it's time to sit down and do one of these, and I go into Bobby LaRoche world, and I find out about the size.
Wow.
And then I go through, that's right. I just go through like some single that you guys had. There's a bunch of stuff on YouTube, like a bunch of songs. And then I saw you guys reunited in 2008.
That's right.
So that was a Massachusetts band?
That was in Western Massachusetts, yeah. We were based in, we're from a small town called Holyoke, Massachusetts, where I was born and raised. And the neighboring town is Northampton, Massachusetts. That's a college town. It has Smith College, is the number one women's school. And we got into a lot of trouble there. But we were based out of Northampton and then eventually out of New York. You know, we were together for forever.
Yeah, you were together for a long time. I didn't realize you got together in 82.
That's right. We put out a single in 82.
What was, because it's funny, because when I heard your record, I was like, wow, out of the blue, this guy's like this pop dude.
Yeah.
But then I go listen to that, and I'm like, oh, this is who he is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No wonder you made your record with Darren. That's a great choice.
It's a good fit.
Yeah.
It was a good fit.
Yeah, and the record's great.
Thank you so much, man.
I wish Patient Man would have been a superhero concept.
Oh, really? What do you mean? What do you mean?
Like if the album, because it's called Patient Man.
That's right.
But if it was Patient Man.
Patient Man,
like Spider-Man,
okay,
or Batman. This right. A superhero whose super power is just extreme patience.
Well, maybe for the second pressing, we can alter the title, change the A to an E.
What does that title hold any weight?
It does. You know, I mean, the simple answer is it's the title track, and right. It's a song about a girl, imagine that, and who shall remain anonymous as she knows who she is. And the lyrics kind of tell the story of somebody you would like to be with, you know, somebody that you have desire for, and it isn't necessarily reciprocated,
yeah,
but you're willing to wait it out, and I'm still waiting it out to this day, and without any stress or bad feelings. It's a hopeful song that maybe I could be the one, you know, for you. Maybe we'd be right together.
Yeah,
and I guess symbolically, although it wasn't written to have any other meaning than the song about the girl. I've changed my lifestyle a lot in the past few years, and I have actually become a patient man in the last few years. So, the CD cover and sitting at a bar with a bottle of mineral water.
You're not messing around. Like, you actually showed up with it.
Did you get
an endorsement or something?
I don't have an endorsement.
You should.
From Topo Chico.
Yeah.
I haven't tried to get one. I hope they don't come after me for putting it on the album cover, but I think they would have.
No, they'd be happy.
Hopefully they'd be happy, yeah.
Yeah. So isn't it weird that like they tell you not to drink the water when you go to Mexico, but everybody here is always drinking Mexican water.
Isn't that funny? It's so popular now. It's the neighborhood I live in is predominantly Mexican American and working class neighborhood, and I love it. And I had never heard of Topo Chico when I was living in New York all those years, and then before that, all over the place. But when I came down here, I saw it at the HEB, and I said, "Oh yeah, I like sparkling water." And price was right, and I just loved it. I just fell in love with it, and now you can order it in a lot of bars in town, and it's become popular. And the price has gone up a little bit. It's still affordable, but it's my beverage of choice.
Yeah.
For today.
Good. Good for today.
For today.
What made you make a record of your own?
I'll tell you what. You know, I had always been writing, and as you know, and as your listeners may not know, and I can tell them real quick, is that my main job is as the guitar player for Patricia Vaughn here in town. And Patricia and I have a long history. We were married for a long time, and we were together for 20 years.
You also have the thing that you need to have with somebody when you play.
Well,
like Jagger Richards. You know what I mean?
I do, and I appreciate it. There's a real chemistry between Patricia and I. You know, we met in 1990 in New York City on the Upper West Side at a place called the China Club, which is long gone. But it was real popular in those days. It was on 75th and Broadway. It was in the basement of the Beacon Theater. And it was one of those velvet rope kind of places that always had live bands, and then at midnight turned into a dance club.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of alcohol, a lot of drugs. And my band, as you were kind enough to mention, The Sighs, S-I-G-H-S, were performing there in those days, and we'd become pretty popular. And record labels started coming around, and we got a management team that I'm still friends with to this day. And anyway, Patricia was working at the China Club, and this would have been July 17th, 1990.
Shit, that's a good memory.
Yeah. Well, she was definitely, it was like a lightning bolt, you know, when I saw her, and I was like, oh my goodness, she's just a stunning, exotic creature, which she still is. And so we met that night, and then I asked her out for 2 years. And I just wouldn't let it go. And fortunately, she was a fan of the music that we were playing. And when we did meet that night, I was real nervous, man. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I got a few years on her, and she's so stunning. But she wanted to talk about the music, which I thought was really cool. And as I got to know her through phone conversations, then she would come to the gigs in New York. You know, I came to realize that she is on a mission to be an artist, to be a recording artist, to be a live performance artist. And, you know, a couple of years later, when she finally realized I wasn't going to stop asking her out, she said, okay. And we went to dinner at a place called the Cottonwood. I'm sure that's not there anymore, in the West Village. Mark Cohn was playing. I remember that night.
Wow.
It was pretty cool walking to Memphis. Yeah. I think had just come out. It was Mark Cohn and John Leventhal, Roseanne Cash's husband. He's a genius guitar player and a producer. So that was a pretty good first date.
Yeah.
And it wasn't long after that it became very clear to me that she was going to pursue her musical ambitions. And I was very reluctant to get involved with her on that level, because I still was doing The Sighs, and I had been joined another band in the East Village called Cardinal Woolsey, and I was a sideman in that after being a frontman for so many years, and I quite enjoyed being a sideman. It was a new experience. So I was reluctant to take on another project, and I was also hesitant for Patricia to get involved in the music business. I said, you know, you don't want to do this. And
Gone from The Sighs, like, you know, working for 10 years, then getting signed to a major label, going to an indie label, you know, big tours, probably stuff starts falling apart, smaller shows, canceled shows.
All of the above, you know, all of the above. I was funny. I don't listen to The Sighs music, you know, anymore. I'm proud of it, and I'm glad we did it, and I'm still friends with the guys. But you know, in preparation for the record coming out, and knowing that, you know, friends like yourself would dig into that, I did go back, and I was amazed to find that there's some stuff on Google and reviews. And one reviewer put it perfect. The Sighs were buried in 1,000 flannel shirts.
Yeah.
I said, wow, that's perfect. Because, you know, we were doing power pop, and we were heavily into the Raspberries. And we were pretty good at it. And I remember recording the record. We did the record at A&M Studios in Los Angeles, in Hollywood.
It? Somebody famous?
Ed Stasium produced it. And Ed was, I guess his best known work was Jeff Healey, The Smithereens. He did Cult of Personality by Living Color.
Yeah.
And Ed was a fantastic producer and a real taskmaker. He was very tough on us, and we needed that discipline. Looking back on it now, and the other thing Ed did was he was Phil Spector's engineer for the longest time, and he did the Ramones records.
Oh yeah.
And Ed played a lot of guitar on those records, which he wasn't credited for, and I'm sure he wasn't seeking credit either. And so Ed was very. He did the Smithereens big hit. What was it called?
Girl Like You.
Yeah. And so at the time when our managers were friends with him, and at the time when they were able to get him on board to do the Size record, you know, we were just thinking, well, we'll just go into the record plant or you know, one of the studios in New York. And then when we find out, oh no, we're going to Los Angeles to record with this guy, and we said, okay, let's go. We didn't realize that we paid absolutely no attention to business in those days, and we were pretty wild partiers, and we were more interested in having fun, really. And you know, now years later, we figured out, well, you know, it was great to get Ed Stasium. Probably economically, it wasn't the best decision because, you know, it's as you know, and as your listeners know that are in the music business, you know, it's all just an advance. You're just advanced everything. And so essentially we were paying for it. Yeah. But it was a good experience. I have no regrets.
Yeah.
I don't know how that came. I don't know how that long answer came to working with Patricia. But eventually Patricia and I started working together. And when she formed a band, I sort of reluctantly joined because she had taken out. And she was so determined. And she still is so determined. And I remember her taking out a couple of ads in the Village Voice looking for guitar players. And we were a couple by then, and you know, her getting replies that, yeah, I'm in a Kiss cover band on weekends. I can rehearse during the week. And I'm like, you know what? Never mind this. I'll do it. And to her credit, she went and found some fantastic musicians in Manhattan. And we had a good little band there. You know, our first gig was at CBGB, and the bass player, Frankie DiPietro, what a great guy. And he was in the Teamsters.
That sounds like a guy from New York.
He is definitely, and he was a Brooklyn guy, and just a lovely guy, and a good bass player, and a good singer, and he was a driver for the Teamsters. So the night of our first gig at CBGB, he said, yeah, you know, I got a call. I got to go into work tonight, you know. I said, we can't make the gig. We're like, Frank, we need you. This is our first gig. He said, no, you don't understand. I got a call. I have to go to work. We said, no, I think I understand. So we did that night as a... acoustic guitar, drums, electric guitar, and Patricia, this is before she was playing, she was just singing. But even though we were without a bass, typical Patricia fashion, she's a great promoter. And she promoted the hell out of the place. Was packed. And it was a home run, you know. And I knew that night, this would have been, I think, 1997. I knew that night, I said, okay, this kid has the X factor, you know. So I decided to kind of throw all in, you know. And I'm so glad I did because so much has come from it.
Yeah, so much. So so you're from Massachusetts?
Originally from Massachusetts. I haven't been there and lived there in 25 years, but I'm from a small mill town, paper mill town called Holyoke, Massachusetts.
What'd your parents do?
My dad was absolutely self-made guy, grew up in poverty, actually. And he was a pharmacist. He went to pharmacy school. Worked in a pharmacy since he was 10 years old, and he used to get paid in books. He was a bookworm and a reader, still is. And he had his first pharmacy at 25 years old. And the town that I'm from was, like a lot of those Northeast New England towns, were separated by ethnicities. There was the Polish neighborhood, right. The Irish neighborhood. And of course, they were the French Canadian. He's first generation American. They were the French Canadian neighborhood,
right?
And so he worked at Grenier's Pharmacy around the corner from his apartment. And Mr. Grenier eventually financed my dad, and so my dad had his first pharmacy at 25, and he was a pharmacist. And the whole family worked there. My mom, my two sisters, my brother became a pharmacist. And then as my father became more successful through the 60s and 70s, eventually in the 80s, my father and brother teamed up and were partners in a quite successful pharmacy. This is before Walgreens,
right.
CVS. So, right. You know, it was like they had a liquor license.
The mom and pop, yeah.
It was mom and pop, but it was a big store and they had a liquor license. They had a cosmetic department. You know, my sisters were the cosmeticians.
That's so cool, so the man.
So the neighbor, you know, the ladies in the neighborhood would come and they'd put makeup on them and I was hysterical. And
when you were a kid, did you go there like get free gum and stuff?
I did, you know, and I did. But, you know, I always made sure I asked for it. You know, my dad instilled honesty in us from an early age.
Okay.
And as long as we asked for it and it was a reasonable request, we'd get the green light.
So how did music happen?
Well, you know, my brother was a very good piano player. And I used to sit under his piano, which we still have. It's at my parents' home. It's still in Holyoke, Massachusetts, where they live part of the year. And so there was always music in the house, and I was born in 63, so even as a young kid, I mean, I do have memories of, you know, watching the Beatles cartoons with mm-hmm. my brother and my two sisters, and there was constantly vinyl being played all the time, and it was current. You know, I would have been 2 or 3 or 4 years old, you know, it would have been in the mid to late 60s, and I absorbed it like a sponge, you know, and you know, I would take my sister's tennis racket, like you might have too, Johnny.
I did too.
Yeah,
not
sure.
My sister's, but I had a tennis racket situation.
Get in front of the mirror,
yeah.
You know, so I guess like yourself, I knew kind of early, I'm like, you know, I really want to do this. And then I guess I was about 11 years old. My sister was taking guitar lessons in Northampton, in the neighboring town. And so I kind of bugged her enough where she said, okay, come on. And so I started taking guitar lessons with her. I guess I was about 11. I was playing a K, I remember, with a funny headstock and not so good action. But I, you know, I was so happy to have it, and I took to it. You know, it worked for me, and I was able to, you know, much to her chagrin, kind of pass her up in about 6 months. You know,
yeah.
And she stopped playing, and I kept on and kept on and kept on, and so you know, I had the music bug. And I got a lot of encouragement. You know, I got a lot of encouragement from my family members, and my parents were just fantastic. You know, I'm the youngest of four, and my folks were pretty desensitized by the time I came around. So they were real free thinkers. You know, they were open minded.
That's cool.
It was so cool. They supported me. I was lucky. So.
Yeah. So how did you get the size together? Were you guys friends in high school or something?
You know, I was a little bit older than the other band members, and you know, I would be the guy in typing class, staring out the window instead of typing. You know, drawing pictures of guitars and thinking
too.
Of band names.
Yeah.
And I can't remember how I came up with the band name. I think I came up with. I knew I wanted to release a record, and I had a label name, Relief Records. And I don't know why. I can't remember why. And I think the sigh of relief came from that. And I said, okay, I think I had the name of the label first. And then, you know, which the label consisted of a P.O. box.
Right.
And a stamp. I got
but
a
you
stamp.
Had it.
I got
yeah.
a stamp made, Relief Records, P.O. box.
Oh, cool.
Holyoke, Mass. I still have it. And so, you know, once I had a name for the band, you know, and I had a handful of songs that I had written.
What were you listening to at the time?
You know, I was listening to then what I'm still listening to now, which is a lot of Everly Brothers, okay. Buddy Holly, early American rock and roll, Chuck Berry, Dion DiMucci, Del Shannon.
So the original pop, you know.
The original pop rock
guys.
And roll,
yeah.
You know, from America. And it's still my... You know, I mean, I listen to all kinds of music now. I listen to classical a lot more than anything now. But I still like to listen to the local. There's some good radio stations here in Austin. And I've been turned on to so much new stuff just by listening to the local stations,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Pretty lucky.
Yeah. So it's weird because I was thinking then, like, I don't know if you were, like, into the producers or into,
I remember
like,
the producers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What she got
yeah.
that I ain't got. She's got you.
Yeah.
You know, I used to love all those, but the tempos on those songs were so fast.
Yeah.
Like the drummer was always ahead of the beat.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm a big Beatles fan. And so I was kind of used to Ringo, like being right in the pocket,
yeah.
almost behind the beat a little bit, and I just loved the feel of those Beatles records. And of course, I love the producers, and you know, go on and on and on. The Plimsolls, Million Miles Away is still such a great song.
Were you guys opening for bands like that were coming through your town?
You know, in
were
those days,
like the local openers?
Yes, yeah. We were. And in those days, this would have been 82, 83. We were pretty good. You know, we weren't great, but we were pretty good. We had a large shot selection of, you know, Ramone songs, Elvis, yeah. You know, the aforementioned Buddy Holly. And so we became popular. We were doing mostly oldie cover songs in those days. We were a trio. And it was neighborhood guys I knew who from the neighborhood. And I was the oldest. And they were good. They were good players. And so, you know, what wound up happening is, as a result of becoming somewhat popular in the Western Mass area, we started getting support slots for like regional bands like Till Tuesday.
Oh, cool.
Or the Stompers. I don't know if you remember the Stompers, as they say back home. And Violent Femmes, we opened up for them on their first go round. Link Ray. There was a band called NRBQ.
Oh, yeah. You know, Conrad Chicron plays with them.
You're kidding.
He did for a while, yeah.
What a great gig. Yeah. And they were gods. They were heroes in New England. And, of course, they became known nationally and internationally. And I guess you could say, and I say it with all due respect, on a smaller scale. But in New England, they were just absolute gods because that's where they were from.
Yeah,
we probably opened for them 10 or 15, you know, 10, 15 times. And I'm sure there's many, many more. We were kind of the go-to opening act because we would help sell tickets, and we were easy. We'd play for $50 in a case of beer, you know, and we just wanted to play, really. But so I can't remember all of them, but there was a hell of a lot in those days.
Yeah. Yeah. And then how many of the guys like ended up moving to New York? Did you get new guys there or something?
Well, you know, we were based in Massachusetts, and Manhattan was only a couple of hours outside by car.
Right.
So I was the only one that moved to the city. And I guess this is after our experience on Virgin Records. You know, in a nutshell, the month that our debut CD was released on Virgin. The debut CD is called What Goes On, and it was on a subsidiary of Virgin called Charisma.
Yeah, I remember Jellyfish was on.
Jellyfish, my God, I was a big fan of them. And me too. Wright, remember Wright Said Fred, I'm Too Sexy?
Great band.
We went to see them one night. Well, that was hysterical. We didn't realize that they just lip-synced, and we went to see them one night. This was in L.A., and they were lip-syncing. Oh, God, and we hung out with them after, and
what were they like? Were they German?
No, they were from the UK.
Oh.
And you know, they were flamboyant. Let's say they were flamboyant. But anyway, what was the question?
You moved to New York.
Oh yeah.
Did you take dudes?
That's right. I didn't, you know, it was the band was sort of coming apart at that because it was after the Size Experience. I know what I was gonna tell you is that, and your listeners, is that the record that when What Goes On came out in June of 92, and we were touring with Jim Blossoms, did the tour with Spin Doctors.
Yeah, saw that.
We did a great tour with this band called Dada from Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, I love that band.
Me too.
I got their record at that time.
Yeah, it's called Puzzle.
Yeah.
And the single was called Disneyland.
Yeah.
And we did a bunch of shows with them, and they were the support act. And they used to just mop the stage with us every night. They used to just kick our ass. So they were so good live. We were good. They were excellent. And I learned a lot from watching those guys. And anyway, in July of 92, a month after the record came out, Virgin Records was sold to EMI. And they switched distributors. So while we were on tour, we couldn't find our record in the stores anywhere. And it was the beginning of the end. You know, even Jellyfish got let go, and we're like, well, they're selling a lot more records than we are. What are our chances, you know? And in the end, when it all went south, I needed a break because I had been doing it for quite some years, and I had already met Patricia Vaughn, and I wanted to be closer to her, and I loved New York. And so I moved to New York, and the guys stayed in Massachusetts and got involved with other musical projects. And I started, it was a slow disintegration. It was a slow breakup because I would still go to Massachusetts and do gigs. And we
needed to make a living.
Also.
Yeah, there's your band that's, you know, bread also, and butter.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. And we did another record with a pretty good indie label out of New York City. I doubt they're still around, called Big Deal Records. They were out of New York City, and we recorded at the Hit Factory. It was a good record. It was the follow up, but by that time, my heart and soul had already kind of moved on from. It's not a unique story. You know, no. My heart was broken by the music business. Boo hoo. That's such a common story. And, you know, I'm one of those people.
Well, it's sad because I think a thing that gets lost in a lot of that stuff, it is business and it is numbers and it is if this thing's going to be a hit or it's not. But it's somebody's dream that they've worked on their whole life.
Right, right.
And so, like, the experience for the artist is just so heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
You know? And the person in business is, okay, well, I'm on to the next band. Which it should be, but it's hard to reconcile that when you're not used to that.
When you
think everyone around you thinks like you do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do.
I know that feeling. I mean, that happened to me in my 30s.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it. Yeah. There's a great thing. Do you ever see that movie, that Wilco movie, I'm Trying to Break Your Heart?
No, I have not.
There's a scene where they get dropped, and he says, like, wow, really hurt my feelings. I thought they were my friends, and they really liked me. And I was like, nobody talks about that, but I had that same. I mean, I didn't get dropped, but, you know, they stop answering your calls, and all of a sudden you're like, dude, what the fuck did I do?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought we were bros.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Weren't we snorting cocaine all night till 6 in the morning, solving the world's problems? What do you mean you're not my friend?
Yeah. Funny. Lars Ulrich.
No. Yeah.
So what made you and Patricia move to Austin? Because she had family down here?
Yeah. She's from San Antonio, Patricia Vaughn. And, you know, Patricia's last name is Rodriguez. And Vaughn is actually her middle name. And she was, in those days, she was pursuing all kinds of arts, acting, modeling. She was quite a successful model. And she was doing commercial acting as well. She was doing music videos. Do you remember Ned's Atomic Dustbin?
Yeah.
My God.
I think I opened for them here.
Really?
I did, yeah, at Liberty Lunch.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, she was in a video for Ned's Atomic Dustbin. And I remember seeing that on 120 minutes. We're really dating ourselves here, Johnny.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. 120 minutes, and I saw her on, and I had met her already. And Patricia's very, very humble, and she's dynamite, you know. And she would have never said that.
Yeah,
I'm going to be on 120 minutes, I'd already met her, and I was absolutely infatuated. And I saw her in the video one night.
Do you feel like she was haunting you? Like, at that point, you're like, I'm thinking about this girl all the time. Now she's on TV, and I didn't even know she was going to be on there.
I guess you could say yes, but the main reason it was haunting me is because I wanted so much to be with her.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she was really, she was not aloof, but, you know, she was, you could approach her, but she was busy. And she was not terribly interested in getting to, being with a musician. You know, she kind of already knew. She was kind of smart enough to know, you know, I probably don't want to be with a musician. That's probably doesn't make for a stable relationship.
No.
You know, so she kept me at arm's length for, like I say, 2 years.
Yeah.
But we, you know, eventually when we started playing in the city, we got popular fast because we got pretty good. You know, I had learned how to, through the years, and I still can do it pretty well, is to be a band leader, to conduct rehearsals, and to get things done, you know? And I did that for her. I took that role on for her. I still have that role for her, and quite happy to have it. And so once we started, you know, playing the better clubs in New York City, Mercury Lounge comes to mind. It's still there. It's a great venue.
Love that place.
Me too. Such a great club. And, you know, we started opening up for Los Lobos and, you know, at Bowery Ballroom. And then we started having labels come out to see us. And I'll never forget, and then I won't throw the guy under the bus. He was from Sony. nice guy, and he invited Patricia and I out to dinner. Really, he really invited her out to dinner, but she said, well, he's coming too. And he was like, oh, all right. And we went and had dinner on the Upper East Side, you know, a neighborhood really which we didn't frequent very much. And right in front of me, he said to her during dinner, you know, Patricia, we think you have a gift and we would like to make you the next Mexican Celine Dion. But the first thing you need to do is get rid of that band and we'll get you some songwriters. And we have high hopes. And you know, she
the
said...
The Mexican Celine.
Mexican Celine, direct quote. We can make you the next Mexican Celine Dion. And to her credit,
so
you know, I must say, to her credit, she said to him, and not in a nasty way, she said, you know, I really want to do my own songs. I'm a songwriter. And for better or worse, I appreciate what you're telling me, and I know you're sincere, and I appreciate your offer. But first of all, I love my band, and I love my songs. So thanks very much. Nice dinner. See you later. And it was around that time that she said, you know, have you ever heard of South by Southwest? And I said, you know, I've heard about it. And she said, we ought to go down there. You know, I haven't seen my family in a while, and I bet I can get us in there. And she's such a go-getter. And she did. And oddly enough, at Liberty Lunch. And I guess it's before I moved down here. Patricia and I came down in 2001. And we played Liberty Lunch with the New York band in March of 99. So I guess it was in the last days.
And it's twilight.
And it's twilight. And I'm so glad I got to play there because it was a fantastic experience. And we crushed it that night. We had a really good gig. And I guess it was after that her and I were talking and she said, what do you think about coming down here? And I said, hey, this is a great town. And I think for our occupation, it makes sense. We love New York, but I mean, you know, you got to get a car service. I remember I lived on Ridge Street on the Lower East Side, which is really hairy in those days. And Uno Cinco Cinco Ridge. I'd call the car service.
Yeah.
You know, so you're dropping $75 before you left your apartment to get your stuff to the venue.
I know.
And, you know, I loved Manhattan. I still love Manhattan. And I, in a way, I hated to leave there because there's so much energy in that town. And I made a lot of good friends there and had a lot of good experiences professionally and personally there. But when I came here, you know, the sun was shining. And we kind of, Patricia and I kind of went around the town and went to a bunch of clubs.
There's room. I feel like when I'm in New York is there's not a lot of room.
Well, you're right. And so it took another couple of years, but finally, in those couple of years, we got married, and you know, we decided that she decided that she'd like to live closer to her family in San Antonio, and that Austin was a good fit. I was amenable to that because I felt like there was potentially opportunity here. And I guess we kind of felt like we hit a ceiling in New York. I think we put out an EP. And, you know, we had a very strong fan base. But, again, you know, we didn't see necessarily room for progression, you know, and business-wise. So we came down here.
Well, you created those really unique, you know. I could see how a record label would have been scared because they didn't know how to put that out because they didn't.
Right.
There was nothing like that out there.
To this day,
which is sad,
because
that's, you know, without, we just wouldn't have anything real if people all felt like that.
That's right. You know, she didn't want to be put in a box. And to this day, you know, she still plays a pretty eclectic mix of, about a third of the shows in Spanish. And
it's strange. I mean, it's outside of the box.
It is. Yes, you know? It is. And you know,
and it's cool as shit. I mean, that's what makes it cool.
Thank you.
You know,
it's served us well here in Texas
and in Europe as well.
Where it's really paid off. Where it's really paid off because they are drawn to, you know, the Texas barroom, you know, A major, da 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 da, you know, rock and roll. Stonesy type stuff, the sort of pop songs, and not teeny bopper pop,
wild,
but
kind of like almost like Western music. Not like country music, but like almost like as Western, kind of like Spanish.
That's
like,
right. That's right. You nailed it.
Stuff.
You nailed it. There's a Southwestern feel.
Yeah.
Of course, and that's indigenous to where she's from, and so you know it's a mixture of material, and it still is, and we've been lucky, you know, because in Europe they've really welcomed her, and we just finished our 25th tour of Europe in the summer, and you know, things are better than ever. It's amazing, you know. We started out, you know, very small,
yeah,
and losing money on the first couple of tours, and but also sensing that okay, there's 37 people here. And they're going crazy. So maybe next time they'll be
60.
You know, 60.
Or, yeah, 70 or something.
Yeah. And that's it progressed very, very slowly, which was also a good thing.
Yeah. Because then you have a real audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not just a flash in the pan, one hit wonder kind of.
That's it.
Yeah. But, so you also toured with your band there this summer, right?
I just got back a couple of weeks ago. And it was the very first time I toured Europe without, you know, Patricia, without being the side man. It's the first time I toured over there as the front man. And basically what I did is approach some booking agents that I know over there. They all passed very nicely, very, very, you know, in a very polite way. And they said, oh, Robert, we have a full roster. You know, when the Germans say, and I love Germany, and I've toured over there so many times, but when the Germans say, I think it would be difficult, that means no.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you ended up doing it?
I ended up doing it because I've made so many friends there over the years, and in my partying days, you know, I would stay up all night long, you know, with these promoters, you know, drink for drink, and you know, I'm not advocating that lifestyle, and I don't regret it because it happened. But one of the good things that came out of it...
You make friends.
I made a hell of a lot of contacts. You know, I made a lot of contacts. Yeah. And so I used my personal contacts and friendships with a lot of these cats to get gigs. And I think I reached out to about 30 people, and I got half. So I got 15 shows in Germany, which was about 3 weeks of, you know, playing Monday through Sunday. And I need a couple days off. I like to have a couple days off, if not more than two.
Yeah.
But so the way we structured it was, you know, play Wednesday through Sunday. Each Sunday was a house concert, which was nice. It was a nice way to kind of wind down the week. And those gigs tend to be a little bit earlier, which means you get to bed earlier. And and the Mondays and Tuesdays off... And, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to do it solo acoustic, and I hadn't really decided that, but I needed to make a decision because the promoters want to know, Robert, will you be coming? You know, they wanted to know what configuration I'd have. So I reached out to my friend John Leon.
Who I love.
Yeah, he's a freak, you know. Yeah. John is an eccentric character, a beautiful guy, and he plays the pedal steel guitar. And I actually saw him for the first time at the old Flipnotics on Barton Springs, and he was playing with Jennifer Jackson, who I've known forever, and she's a wonderful singer, and she's also here in town now, and she's great. And it was just the two of them, acoustic guitar and pedal steel, and it struck me. I said, what a beautiful combination of a little bit trippy and, a little bit... kind of an ethereal sound, and it appealed to me. So I kind of put that in my memory bank, and when I was doing my record, I thought of him. I thought, ooh, pedal steel might work on a couple of these songs, and he wound up playing on two or three songs. So I reached out to him, and he's now in New York City.
Oh, really?
And he was into the idea, and he kind of rearranged his schedule, and then I said, well, you know, it would be nice to have a third member, another singer, because there's a lot of harmonies on my records, and I'm doing most of them. And it was difficult to recreate that live. And there was a guy, his name is John Diven, ironically, from Houston, Texas, originally. He's from Houston. And he's a guy that he's a fan of the, of Patricia and I. And he comes to the gigs, and he's lived in Germany for 26 years. He went, when he was a young man, to Oktoberfest and fell in love and got married, had a couple of kids, and never came back to America.
Wow.
And great guy, high energy guy. And so I know him from, like, you know, the merch table.
Right.
He had an Austin City Limits shirt on. I said, really? Where'd you get that over here? He said, oh, I'm from Texas, man. And one thing led to another, and turns out he's a musician in the city of Darmstadt in the symphony orchestra. He's a concert bass player, upright bass, playing with a bow. And so I reached out to him, and he's super busy. He's on tour as we are doing this interview. He's in Mexico City right now, and he's always on the road with the Darmstadt Symphony Orchestra.
Wow.
So I said, you know, I hadn't really thought of it originally, but I think that would be a cool fit. Pedal steel, acoustic guitar, and a bowed bass. Yeah. And he was into the idea, and immediately kind of said, you know, I'm so busy, I don't think I can do it, but send me the dates, and equally as important, send me some MP3s. So I did. And 24 hours later, and I happened to be in Germany at the time on tour, and 24 hours later, he said, I really like your stuff. I'm going to see what I can do. And he got subs for his bass gig. Oh, you know, man. He's first chair, so he has the choice to get subs. And luckily, he didn't miss any tours, but he did miss some regional work. And I said, you know, you're not going to make a lot of money touring with me, but it'll be a good experience. And so he did it. And while I was on tour with Patricia, I was in, Leverkusen, Deutschland, where Bayer aspirin was invented.
And oh, really?
The factory is still there. And it was, I had made arrangements after the gig to take a train to Speyer, Deutschland, which is in the southwest Germany, just before the Black Forest. I've gotten to know Germany very well. It's a beautiful part of Deutschland. Sehr schön, mein Freund. And I took the train and, you know, had no expectations. Nice guy picked me up in Mannheim, and we drove to Speyer and immediately started rehearsing. He had all the songs charted. And he was kind of an orchestra nerd.
Yeah.
You know, and no disrespect, John. I don't mean that
in
a disparaging way. But what I mean is musically, he had every single thing down pat. And I was like, wow, this is going to work. And he could sing. And there's some, for your listeners, if you want to check out Robert LaRoche, LaRoche, on YouTube, there's, I think, 4 or 5, maybe 6 videos that fans took with their phone.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't love the quality of that, but you can't control it, and it's out there.
Yeah, it's there.
It is what it is. And I'm glad it's out there, actually. So there are some videos of this last tour. I did 15 shows in Germany, and then I did a week in Italy. And I love Deutschland, and but I sure love Italy too.
Yeah, man.
The culture there is my speed. You know, it's a slower culture.
Yeah.
You know, 2.5 hours for lunch and very warm people. You know, and with a real like the Germans and like a lot of the European countries that I've toured in with Patricia. They love American music. They love music from Texas. They're fascinated with Texas. And they, I don't know, I think they have a vision of we're riding horses to work or something. And far be it for me to dispel that, you know.
No, I always had a problem going there, like, through connections that I had from here.
Right.
Because I just was not Texas enough. Like, people would just be like, you know what I mean? Like,
I do. I sure really do. I'm Texas from Massachusetts. Music, I know exactly what you mean.
Where they're kind of like, you know, I don't want this guy here.
Yeah,
we can get these guys over here. We already have people like that over here.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
I think I do. Yeah. I think I do. I was fortunate, Johnny, because I wasn't selling myself. I was associated with Patricia Vaughn, who couldn't be more Texas. You know, she's like a 9th generation Texan, Latina, you know, beautiful creature. And
Mexican Celine Dion.
There you go. Mexican Celine Dion. So I was, my association with Patricia opened up a lot of doors for me in Europe and continues to do so. And I have such great appreciation, and she knows that.
That's good, too. I mean, you put in a lot of time doing it, too. I mean, they're your doors that you opened as well.
I appreciate that. And so, you know, even on this tour, you know, I would get to a town or a city like Cologne, for example, and I see on the posters, you know, guitar man for Rickenbacker man, because I play a vintage Rickenbacker, and they know me as Rickenbacker man. You know, I've been called so much worse than that. I'm happy to be called Rickenbacker man. But I noticed that in the promotion for these gigs that they were doing on their own, my association, you know, as Patricia's guitar player, and that was absolutely fine with me. So I had a combination of Patricia Vance coming out to see me and a combination of the curious, you know, the curious music fan, a lot of musicians, of course, and, you know, their minds were blown by the pedal steel. Yeah. So there would be several evenings where John Leon, after the concert, was doing pedal steel demonstrations, you know, for the guitar players. Cool. And I'm there, man, that's a beast. Very difficult. I've tried to play that and I gave up. I said, oh, this is so much easier to just play a C and an A minor than a...
Yeah. Than that thing.
Than that thing.
Yeah. It has too many strings and it's weird. So I like that you had... you had a great cast of musicians on the record, but you also brought in really great guitar players.
Indeed.
It's interesting that a great guitar player likes to bring in great guitar players.
Well...
They're guys you wanted to play with. I saw you wrote with Jake Owen, right?
I did. Jake and I have had a co-write on this song, and it was pretty spontaneous. You know, Jake is another one who, like John Leon, who was in Austin for years, and he's now living in Brooklyn. And but this is while Jake was still here, and the record was such a gradual undertaking. You know, there was no stress. There was no time frame. I financed it myself. I recorded it in between tours. And and as a result of it being self-financed is another reason why it took so long. But, you know, I knew Jake through Michael Ramos, through Taranga Cakewalk. And I just thought he had something special to offer. And we got to talking and we became friendly. And he's like, man, I got a studio, you know, if you ever want to lay down a demo. And I took him up on it. And what wound up starting as a demo wind up becoming a co-write, the song called I Could Be the Light. Hadn't really intended it to be a co-write, but I kind of hit a wall and I said, you know, Jake, this song needs a bridge, you know, and I'd like to change some of the words around, and would you be up for, you know, taking a stab at it? And I think he got back to me a week later. He's like, come on in, bring your guitar. And so the demo wound up becoming, in the end, a finished track, you know. But it was great working with him, and he's got a lovely serenity about him when he records, and a super productive guy.
Yeah.
Nice guy, too.
Yeah, super nice guy. When he smiles, I think of Guy Smiley from Sesame Street. Remember news guy?
Okay.
Yeah. Another one of my favorite dudes that you had on there, a lot of my favorite dudes, Donnie Wynn, Michael Ramos, but Joe Reyes.
Man.
How do you know that guy?
Joe, what a genius he is.
You guys know him through San Antonio or something?
Yes.
Buttercup?
Yes, and even before Buttercup.
Yeah.
I think Patricia heard about Joe Reyes. You know, Patricia's from San Antonio, and he's quite known down there. He's quite known here now, and he's a busy session guy. And this would have been probably about 2005 on Patricia's second recording, second CD, which is called Guitars and Castanets.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember exactly how we met Joe, but I know I met him through Patricia. And talk about another beautiful guy, just a positive energy. And, of course, his chops are crazy.
Yeah. And he also comes from the world of power pop.
He does. Yeah. Yes, he does. And it was a good fit. Yeah. And Patricia invited him to play on her second CD. And we were absolutely blown away by him. And then, of course, became fans and friends of his. And he has since subsequently played on Patricia's CDs after that. I think he's on every CD of hers, second, third, fourth, and fifth, and now the sixth. He has a new CD out, and I'm pretty sure he's on all of them.
Wow.
And he had become a friend. He did a couple of gigs with us, and when Patricia and I are doing promotional stuff, radio shows or TV in San Antonio, we have him come out.
Yeah,
no rehearsal at all. We just send him the songs. You don't need to rehearse with that cat, you know. And so I invited him to play on my record as well, and he thankfully said yes.
Good. Good man. He's a great guy. How was it working with Darren? What all, like, as Darren, like, as a producer for you, like, did you didn't, like, you know, producers, there's different producers that do different stuff. There's, like, guys that just do sound. There are guys that don't even know music. They just know if something sounds good or
that's
not.
That's right. That's right.
And then there are guys that, like, dig into the fucking songs. And yeah. when you come in, all of a sudden your song has a new ending and an
that's
intro.
Right.
And
that's right.
What kind of guy is Darren?
You know, Darren, first of all, I've known Darren for some years.
He played with you guys.
He did play with Patricia and I, and he drummed for us for a while. And I also know that he's a power pop guy, and of course we're both big fans of the Beatles. And you know, the thing about Darren that drew me to him was he's got an abundance of positive energy.
Yeah,
you know,
he's one of the most benevolent people I know.
As you know. Yeah. From working with him yourself.
Never coming after anyone with some bad shit.
He's just good energy to be around.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit tentative at first, you know, when I started recording, because I hadn't done it, and of course I'd have done it with Patricia so many times, but this was different. These were strictly my songs and me singing again, which I hadn't been the lead singer again for quite some years. And I guess I trusted Darren. I guess I was drawn to him because he was a friend. And I knew he was a super positive guy, so I knew it would be a comfortable process. You know, it wasn't like you mentioned some producers come in, and I've worked with them, and I know you have too, that say, you know, we need to change that bridge or that ending, we need to do this or that. And I'm not saying those are bad suggestions.
No.
But I knew Darren would be gentle with me, you know, particularly at the beginning. And anything that Darren interjects, you can call it constructive criticism or whatever is always done in a positive and uplifting way.
Yeah.
And he works quickly, which I also like to do.
Yeah.
And he also kind of read my mind on a lot of these songs and said, you know, my name's Robert. You know, my name on the CD is Robert LaRoche. That's my actual name, but everyone calls me Bobby, and I'm fine with that. I've been called
Bobby. It's Bobby's. Like Robert De
Niro. Right, there you go. There you go. And anyway, you know, so Darren would say, you know, Bobby, I think you ought to go for this note, and I think maybe you ought to trim the fat a little bit on the end. And I just trusted him. You know, I just trusted him because I felt like, you know, I'm not objective.
Yeah.
He is. And it worked.
Yeah. The thing about him that I think is really good, and it just dawned on me after all these years of working with him, but this is the best way I think I can put it. Because, I mean, you know, like, I'm not the world's, I mean, this is an understatement, I'm not the world's greatest harmony singer. Like, I'm a fucking lead singer, dude. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Harmony's like, I know the blatant ones.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, you know, in the Queen or, like, something kind of weird or, like, a lower middle one where you're like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
He doesn't put you down. He brings you up.
Absolutely.
With his guidance and criticism.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He doesn't put you down. He brings you up. That's the kind of dude he is.
That's what I found working with him. And, you know, it got personal. It got very personal, you know, because I would record at Darren's home studio, and pretty much every song on the record, I'd have to look at it and to see exactly. But to the best of my recollection, because the record was recorded over 5 or 6 years, you know, we would start by recording the acoustic guitar. And Darren has a great vintage Martin. So I would bring my vintage Gibson, then do a track on the vintage Martin. And we already had a pretty good pad of acoustic sounds. And then I would sing, and then I would get the Rickenbacker out and do a rhythm part. And I'm mainly a rhythm player. You know, you were kind enough to say, why would a guitar player, you know, good guitar player have the guest guitar player? And one of the reasons is because I'm mainly a rhythm player, Johnny. You know, I'm, yeah, sure, I can solo. And, of course, I do solo with Patricia all the time. But I guess I'm most comfortable laying down a good foundation. And so I wanted to bring in some guys that could just shred. And without any worked out solos, just let the tape roll and go for it, you know, and guys like Joe Reyes, guys like Jake.
What's nice also, it's like when you're making soup, sometimes you don't just need one spice,
that's it.
You know?
That's it.
And you're bringing some other stuff.
Indeed. Indeed. And, yeah, so, you know, that's kind of how the formation of the CD started. Doing those demos with Darren and then kind of wanting to take it to the next level. Okay, so now it was kind of a backwards way of recording, because I've always recorded, and I suspect you've recorded that way too, where you go into a studio and you cut bass and drums. You get basic
that.
Tracks.
Yeah.
This was the opposite of that. You know, we did the rhythm guitar parts, and we did the vocals, and then we got Donnie Wynn, you know, who drummed for Patricia for years, and he's on her records, and he's a dear friend of mine, great guy, and Scott Garber,
yeah, both great guys,
yeah. And what were you going to say about Donnie?
I there's not even any words.
Everyone
the
guy's
has
the a
greatest.
Donnie. Everyone has a Donnie story. He is, for your listeners that don't know who Donnie Wynn.
Episode 12, and we're like in the 400s.
Okay.
Something
oh, so you've worked
point.
With him before
oh,
in here.
Yeah. Well, when I came up with the idea of, I'm going to do this podcast, I started telling my friends, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to talk to musicians. No musician in town. Every single musician, the first person, they'd be like, dude, you got to get Donnie. And I'm like, dude, of course. Like, of course I'm going to get Donnie.
Donnie is... a lifelong musician from Louisiana. He's a drummer and a percussionist, and at a very young age, quit high school, and joined Dr. John.
Yeah.
You know, I think Dr. John may have spotted him playing. I don't remember exactly. I'll be seeing him here pretty soon, so I can ask him. But anyway, and then the famous story that a lot of people may or may not know is that he... became Robert Palmer's drummer for 20 years and played on, you know, the hits, Addicted to Love and Simply Irresistible. And then the list goes on and on and on, played on, you know, Wang Chung and Patti LaBelle and Brooks and Dunn, and on and on, you know. And so he's got a pretty serious record on Robert
LaRoche.
And he plays on Robert LaRoche's Patient Man, you know. So I knew I wanted to use Scott Garber, who's a great bass player, and he's one of the founding members of Giant Sand, and he's got a long track record, Scott does. And so I've been working with those guys for years with Patricia. So it was a natural fit to get those two in. And what we did is we took the demos that I'd done with Darren, and Darren came in as a producer in the capacity of a producer. And we went to a couple of different studios. We went to Tequila Mockingbird here in town, and with Kyle Crushman as the engineer.
Yeah.
And he's a fantastic engineer. And we also went out to Lakeway to HEK studio. And so, you know, it was a little bit of a backwards way to record.
Still cool.
But it was still cool.
Still made your record.
Still got the record done. There you go.
So, I mean, I bet that also Darren was a good guy. You were going through a couple of life changes.
Indeed.
That probably left you pretty raw. That I can feel like in some of the songs, you can, like, there's a couple things you're like, oh yeah, wow.
Yeah.
He was in a serious
place.
Where are you now?
I'm in a human way, are you feeling good and strong? You know, I'm in a good way. I'm part of a 12-step program, and we'll leave it at that. You know, I changed my lifestyle around, and I've been clean and sober for over 3 years. And one of the things it's done for me is to appreciate each day, to appreciate one day at a time, and to get the most out of each day, to accentuate the positive. And you know, I don't pretend to live in a utopian,
of course not,
world.
But it takes a lot of work to be happy.
And well, you know, and I'm better equipped now to be happy. Yeah. And one of the things cleaning up my act has done for me, and I can only speak for myself on that, is it's allowed me to get my self-respect back and get the respect back of the people that are most important to me in my life. And so that is, you know, and of course not having a hangover every morning is also helpful. also leads to productivity. You know, I can remember so many tours, Johnny, you know, being in, like, you know, Luzern, Switzerland, you know, one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And we're all going out to take pictures, and I'm like, oh, I'm just going to sleep. I'm a little tired. Yeah. which was code speak that my head was on fire.
Yeah.
And so while my colleagues, my bandmates, were out seeing this beautiful town, I was in the hotel room all day sleeping it off until soundcheck, where I would then go directly to the bar and get back on the train, you know. And I don't demonize alcohol. I really don't. And I recognize that it's a minority of the population that suffers from the disease that I do. But the good thing is, through sobriety, I have been able to, and I fully acknowledge that I am only sober today, you know. I only have today. And so it's given me some peace. Let's put it that way. It's given me a little peace. And also the energy to finish this record, you know. And there's a lot of stuff on this record that's very emotional, and I think you'll be able to hear it, and your listeners will be able to hear it in the vocal performances.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, well, the record's absolutely beautiful, and for those of you that live in Texas, there are release shows coming up. This will be coming out on the Tuesday before the release show, so Friday, November 6th at Strange Brew Lounge Side. That will be a full band, right?
It is. That's going to be Donnie Wynn on drums, Scott Garber and on bass, and I have
Whit Williams.
Mr. Whit Williams from Cotton Mather is going to.
So how did you see another great guitar guy?
He is great, and
he is great.
I was. Of course, I knew about Cotton Mather, and I knew Robert Harrison, but Darren, you know, Murphy.
Darren's a huge fan.
Darren Murphy, who produced my CD. I wanted Darren to play on the CD release show because he plays some guitar on the record, and he's just a great all-around musician.
But we're playing
somewhere. And you guys are playing Skyrocket. Sorry. Skyrocket is playing. And, of course, I understand that. And Darren said, but as typical Darren fashion, is like, but don't worry.
I've got a guy.
I got a guy. You know, that's Darren. There's always a solution with Darren. And he said, you're going to love this guy, Whit Williams. He's the perfect fit. And I had
to
not
put my band together.
What's that?
Genius. I mean, it's just genius. I should get Darren to put my bands together.
Well, he got Whit to, and I rehearsed with him last week for the first time. I'm rehearsing with him this evening. And he knew all of the songs. He's a great singer. Darren was right. He's the perfect fit. So Whit Williams. And there may be a special guest or two.
Okay.
A couple of female vocal special guest spots. And
okay.
Probably Patricia Vaughn. We're working on that, so.
All right.
We'll see.
And then Saturday on November 7th, you'll be playing at the Almost Pharmacy in San Antonio.
That's correct.
And you're playing with violinist David Perales?
That's right.
Just you and him?
That's going to just be a duo. It's David and I. It's a cool venue. If there's any musicians out there looking for places to play in San Antonio, it is actually a very old, I believe it's from the 50s, original Formica counters. It's still
well,
like,
you've come full circle.
Yeah.
back at the pharmacy.
I'm back at the pharmacy. I sure am. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Did you tell your dad?
I did tell him. Yeah. Yeah. I have one of the great things is my relationship with my dad has improved so much, you know, in the last few years. And we talk a lot now.
That's good.
And he's 86 years young.
Jeez.
He's fighting cancer. This is his third go-round with prostate cancer. And he's a tough guy. War veteran, you know.
My grandpa just passed away. He was 94, like last year.
94.
So he's this kind of, I took that from his office, that cowboy guy.
That's
he's
awesome.
That kind of guy. You know what I mean?
Johnny
he's,
is
he's
now
actually that guy over there. That's him. That's my grandpa in Cuba.
Wow.
Looking out over the...
He looks like he was a badass, man. Chingon.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And he lived to be 94?
Yeah.
Well, I pray that
fought my... Fought the prostate, too.
Pray that my dad makes it that far. And so anyway, yeah, my dad knows that I'm back to my roots.
Good.
Funny.
Good. Anything else? This has been great talking to you, man.
And you too, Johnny,
People can pick up the record. They can find you at robertlaroschemusic.com, and there's links to everything. Just go there first.
Indeed.
And tour dates.
That's right. That's right. And there's some great tour, you know, great tour photos. I was lucky, you know. One of the things when we tour in Europe, I say we, when I tour with Patricia Vaughn, is she's very photogenic, and there's always a gaggle of photographers. So I was lucky enough to get some of those same people. I invited them to my show, so I got a lot of good press shots out of this tour.
Yeah, you did get some great photos.
Oh, it's funny.
Yeah, people can go check those out on Facebook, too. Here, there.
Indeed.
Robert LaRoche.
Robert LaRoche, I have an artist page on Facebook, and check it out.
What's your feeling on the social media world?
Well, you know, I was reluctant to get involved. My strength is music.
Yeah.
Like you. And my technical skills, my computer skills. You know, I was born in 63. I feel like I kind of missed the curve a little bit. But I also now understand and through the prodding of good close personal friends, like, hey man, you're putting a record out, you need to put yourself out there. So it is weird.
But you need to.
But you need to. And not only have I joined, you know, not only am I on Facebook now, I've come to enjoy it. And
that's cool.
It's a nice way to communicate with people in a kind of a brief manner, you know, without speaking on the phone necessarily, in a brief way, just quick contact. And, you know, I don't have a smartphone. I still have a flip phone.
Really?
And I'm, you know what? I'm quite
That's
happy.
That's pretty cool.
Johnny, I'm quite happy with my flip phone.
Does it have a camera on it?
It does, but I have no idea how it works. And I could drop my flip phone off a building, and
right.
there's a good chance it'll still work.
Yeah.
So anyway, my feeling on social media is all good.
Good. Well, people can pick this album up. Patient Man, go to robertlarochemusic.com. You said it's also on CD Baby.
CD Baby, and it's at Waterloo and Antone's Records.
Antone's Records.
And I have a in-store at Antone's Records on Sunday.
Oh, really?
Sunday afternoon, November 22nd at 3 p.m.
I will go.
Great.
I love going there. Eve and Mike are good buddies of mine. I play with Eve. So.
Great, great. I'll be playing at their store in a few weeks, and Sunday, November 22nd.
Something magical like Waterloo. Man, that's like the flagship
record store
of the United States, kind of.
I remember the first time I went there, and it's when we earlier in the interview we mentioned Liberty Lunch, where I played there with Patricia 99. And one of the things, you know, people are saying, hey, there's a great record store. You got to check it out. And I was living in Manhattan. There were some good ones in there, too.
Yeah.
And I walked into Waterloo, and I'm kind of like, yep, I get it. I totally get it, you know?
The one thing about Waterloo doesn't have that Antone's has, outside of Eve and Mike, I love John Koontz, but like Eve and Mike and the smell of the records.
Ooh.
Like that smell that's in Antone's records.
Yeah, okay, like cool. I'm going to find that out.
You're going to love it.
That's all the way across the Ann Richards Bridge, Johnny. I don't generally go that far, but
well,
I will.
It's in a good place, plus next to Tom Tabbouleh. You can go over there and get some Tom's Tabbouleh.
And isn't it also near Buffalo Exchange?
Yep, you can get yourself.
I got these boots that I'm wearing right now.
Those are good.
These are pretty good boots for a very affordable price at Buffalo Exchange. And I wasn't interested in getting Western boots. And this little gal I was seeing at the time, who was Cuban.
Uh-oh.
You know something about them. She said, Robert, those boots are hot. I said, you know, really? I mean, I'm from Massachusetts. I've never even thought about wearing cowboy boots. I like living in Austin very much. And she said, just try them on, baby. Just try them on. And they fit like a glove. You know, they feel like slippers,
perfect,
you know.
Perfect boots.
And I've been wearing them ever since.
Good. Hard to find. Well, dude, thank you for coming. Everyone get out there. Pick up Patient Man. Get out to Strange Brew Friday, November 6th, and to Almost Pharmacy in San Antonio Saturday, November 7th.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thanks, buddy. Follow me only when you can. In the usual parts, you're gonna find me. I'm a patient man. Yeah, Robert LaRoche. His album, Patient Man, is out. You can find out all about him at robertlarochemusic.com. The release show, Friday. Yeah, that's right. This coming Friday, November 6th, Strange Brew Lounge Side with Patricia Vaughn, Casey Crowley. Saturday, November 7th at Almost Pharmacy in San Antonio. All right? Patient Man is a great album produced by one of my very best friends, Darren Murphy. You've heard him on the show. Go to robertlarochemusic.com to find out more about Robert LaRoche and when he's coming to a town near you. Yes. All right. Hey, listen, while you're out there doing the Robert LaRoche stuff, don't forget you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can like our Facebook page and see a photo of me and Robert, and I'll find out all kinds of stuff. Updates on bands, updates on me, updates on the show, what's going on, find out the new releases of the show. So get out there. How did I get here? Facebook page, like it. If you want to get more involved, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I am at Johnny Gowdy. All right. Let's hear some more music from Robert LaRoche. I hope you guys all have a great week. Don't forget Ben Ballmer episode coming out on Friday. Great songwriter, Ben Ballmer. All right, but for now, let's do The Patient Man with Robert LaRoche. Let's get down, everyone.
Light the stage and make it bright. She'll be breaking hearts tonight. My little yellow rose girl. See the vampires drenched in lust. They will never taste the blood of my little yellow rose girl. Oh, my little yellow rose. Oh, my little yellow rose girl. My little yellow rose girl. So light the stage and make it bright. She'll be breaking hearts tonight. My little yellow rose girl.